Gar and I, as you know, as we sit here together and talk about this, we understand accountability, and we are accountable for what this team did this year. We don't run away from it. We accept it. That's on us.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA, your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
For me to be here in the NBA organization, such a historic organization, the Chicago Bulls, so it's just a dream come true for me.
Live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday.
This is going to be a process. You'll snap your fingers and it all happens at once, but that's the plan moving forward.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day. Locked On Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
Levine, he goes right by.
Oh! Stop it, Sampson! Did you not get the memo? He didn't come for the massage, he came for the facial. Oh my goodness! Woo. Oh my goodness, watch this. Oh, why, Sampson, why?
And then committed the foul.
I think he didn't remember Zach LaVine was a dunk contest winner. Look at Sampson. Sampson's upset. You know when you get dunked on, you want to push somebody. You were late getting over there, but early for a poster. Where's my poster machine at? Oh.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm your host, Matt Peck, my co-host Jordan Malley out for the day. We're live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app on the Nothing But Net channel every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. Follow us on Twitter at Bulls underscore Peck, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls, and subscribe to us on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Spotify, anywhere and everywhere you find and follow your favorite podcasts, you'll find us. Also, be sure to follow the Locked On Podcast Network on Facebook and Twitter. Well, as I said, I'm your host, Matt Peck, holding it down for Jordan. Last week, I was knocked on my ass with the Chicago crud. I guess this week it's Jordan's turn, so I'll be holding down the fort without him. But we got a great guest for you on today's episode. I'll be chatting with Darnell Mayberry, who covers the Bulls for The Athletic Chicago. Talk to him about the Bulls' loss against the Kings, a epic collapse after blowing a 21-point lead for the Bulls' seventh straight loss. They wind up that West Coast road trip and now have a few days off before hosting the Timberwolves on Friday. We'll also get Darnell's thoughts on the remaining 48 hours or so before the NBA's trade deadline on Thursday. What, if anything, the Bulls have in store for moving pieces like Jaren Grant, Justin Holiday, or perhaps Robin Lopez. So without further ado, here's that interview with The Athletic's Darnell Mayberry. Right now, we're very pleased to welcome to the Locked On Bulls podcast for the first time, Darnell Mayberry, who covers the Bulls for The Athletic Chicago. You can follow him on Twitter at Darnell Mayberry. Darnell, how you doing, bud?
Good, Matt. How are you?
Doing all right. Not exactly a fun night to stay up late watching a Bulls game out on the West Coast. The Bulls coughing that one up in ugly fashion as we got close to the midnight hour here in Chicago. That was the second time this season the Bulls have lost a game in which they held their opponent to fewer than 10 points in a quarter, coughed up a 21-point lead. From your perspective, was this more about the Kings bouncing back after a bad start and getting some nice production off their bench in the second half, or was this just an unforgivable breakdown from the Bulls in the end of that game?
I think you have to give credit to the Kings. At the same time, I think you also have to, you can't ignore the fact that Robin Lopez was tossed in the final 5 minutes of the second quarter, didn't play the second half. And then obviously, you know, not having Chris Dunn and Lauri Markkanen, the odds were stacked against them going in a bit, even though the Kings are worse than the Bulls. They've been really good in close games this year somehow, and I do think you have to give them credit. But without Robin Lopez, you could kind of see the writing on the wall there in the second half, and especially when Cristiano Felicio started the second half. Like, you just kind of had a feeling that this one was going to get away.
Yeah, you mentioned the no choice Hoiberg had but to start Felicio in the second half after the Lopez ejection. Felicio really has struggled this season. With the absence of Markkanen, he's gotten some more minutes out of necessity. But really, that four-year contract extension he signed in the offseason is looking like more and more of a mistake. as we go down the stretch of this regular season, now having Omer Asik, the former Bull, back on the roster because of the trade sending Nico to New Orleans, do you anticipate Hoiberg just like trying to force through and get Felicio to have some sort of salvation to this season? Or do you think at some point he's just going to say, you know what, we might as well give Asik some minutes because Felicio is getting torched out there?
Yeah, I think he has to play Felicio. And I don't think he wants to do that on his own. I think he probably is going to have to do that because his bosses may tell him to do that. They gave him that money. Hoiberg didn't give him that money. And now it's up to Hoiberg to try to probably make his bosses look good and play him and see what they've got and make him or give him an opportunity to live up to the deal that they gave him last summer. It's a unfortunate position for Hoiberg to be in because obviously Asik is a better player, a more proven player at the very least. And, you know, Felicio, as you said, has been underwhelming and disappointing this year. And he really doesn't even fit into what Hoiberg wants to do. You know, he can't shoot threes or he doesn't shoot them great. He took one the other night, or I guess the other day against the Clippers late in the game. But he's not a pace and space type player, and he can't guard out there in space. So, you know, I don't know how Hoiberg is going to use him, but he's been on record and saying, and Paxson has been on record also as saying, minutes are going to be at a premium for Asik and Jameer Nelson for however long, you know, he's in town. But I don't see them going away from Felicio, which is good and bad. I mean, it probably is going to help the tank, but, you know, it's going to be probably ugly at times.
As we're talking about Hoiberg's options in his rotation, which has been really limited in the absences of Dunn and Markkanen, two of these key pieces for the Bulls this season. Obviously, you saw Zach LaVine try to hold it down and lead this team, particularly on the offensive end last night in Sacramento. He has a season-high 27 points. He had that monstrous posterization of Jakar Sampson that was, whew, I mean, that was some dunk contest in real-time material there. You've penned some thoughts recently on the shot selection of LaVine and sort of his struggles finding a rhythm as he's made his way back from the ACL. We're seeing increased minutes. He played, you know, 32 minutes or so last night. I mean, do you think that this is more of a, particularly in the absences of Markkanen and Dunn, LaVine trying to do too much as far as his shot selection? Or do you see this as a bigger problem of LaVine kind of getting in sync with Fred Hoiberg's system and what Hoiberg wants to run and what kind of looks LaVine should be getting for himself?
The biggest thing to me, Matt, and I wrote this the other day, is I don't know if it's a product of him trying to find his rhythm or if it's just LaVine being himself. If that's just who he is, it might just be something that we have to grow accustomed to. You know, him taking these one and two dribble pull-ups that are fairly contested or these step-back jumpers and three-pointers of all things that are lightly or fairly contested as well. That might be who he is. And if it is, it's not going to go anywhere. I think he's trying to, in conjunction with Hoiberg, trying to find ways to cut those out of his game. And I think that he's going to probably do a good job. Fred Hoiberg has really worked wonders with Chris Dunn on his shot selection and you know, his shooting in general. And I think he could probably do the same thing with LaVine as he gets his legs under him. But right now, you know, he's played, what, 10, 11 games. I think last night was his 11th game. So I'd give him some time. You know, really, with LaVine, I don't see anything over these last 30 or so games, 29 games, I guess they've got left. You know, I don't think it'll be fair to really judge him all that much. He's not playing with a lot of talent, and he's coming off the ACL injury. So to me, it's just let him go out there and do what he does and try to work his way back. And then next year, I think, you know, at the start of the season is when it's probably more fair to judge him and evaluate him.
As we're talking with Darnell Mayberry, who covers the Bulls for The Athletic Chicago, follow him on Twitter at Darnell Mayberry. Now, Darnell, you also had a nice nugget in your post-game recap of Bulls Kings about David Nwaba and the fact that he's been struggling in the last four or five games. Really a pleasant surprise as far as a guy who got a little bit of run with the Lakers last season, but nobody really saw this productivity coming from him. particularly as a guy who loves to run the floor in Fred's system and plays some really aggressive defense. But as Levine's minutes have increased since his comeback, Nwaba has sort of struggled to find a rhythm. And, you know, of course, there's still Justin Holiday getting 35, 36 minutes a game in that starting shooting guard spot. So do you see this as a temporary, you know, a temporary lull in Nwaba's game? Or do you think Hoiberg needs to do something different? And you know, obviously, there's a factor of maybe the Bulls find a trading partner for Holiday sometime in the next couple of days. But assuming Holiday doesn't get moved, what happens with Nwaba as Levine's minutes grow?
Yeah, and it's not just Levine. It's also when Dunn comes back, it's going to squeeze Nwaba even more, even though they're obviously two different positions. But just that backcourt, you know, wing guard position, it's going to be tricky getting all those guys' minutes. And, you know, it's funny that we're talking about how they've got difficult decisions to make on a roster that's, you know, so void of talent. But, you know, they are pretty strong at the guard spots. And Nwaba, to me, is a keeper. You know pretty much what Paul Zipser is at this point. I would let Nwaba go. Not let him go. I'd let him play free, I should say, not let him go. But I'd let him play freely and give him some more minutes. I wrote last night, you know, Paul Zipser played like 32 minutes. Why not give 10 of those to David Nwaba? I understand Zipser is a much better shooter and a better floor spacer. But Nwaba gives you so many things on both ends. Not necessarily as a shooter, but as a cutter, as a hustle player who's going to get garbage points. So let him get those opportunities. To me, you know, he looks like a core piece that you could really sort of get guys to play around, and he could fit with other guys, I should say. So I like Nwaba a whole lot, and Zipser and some other guys who are playing heavy minutes, Jaren Grant. Ryan Arcidiacono, all of those minutes to me should be going to guys like David Nwaba. And also, Matt, you know, encourage him to shoot the corner three more. You know, he likes to put it on the floor, go baseline. But if you want him to develop into a 3-and-D wing, let him shoot some threes. I think he's only got, you know, probably less than 15 three-point attempts on the season. This, to me, is the time to let him run wild and go out there and get up some shots and try to develop that three-pointer.
So you think he does have the potential to develop that stroke at the NBA level? Because, I mean, as you mentioned, nobody in the league has taken fewer three-point attempts than David Nwaba. It seems like that's just sort of a non-starter for him. But you're saying that if the Bulls just sort of give him the green light there, if Fred Hoiberg, you know, we've heard about Fred Hoiberg's ability to work with shooters and their shooting stroke. He's obviously made some strides already there with Chris Dunn. You're saying you think Nwaba has the potential to turn himself into a three-point threat?
Three-point threat is a little strong, but I think he could develop a serviceable three-point shot, if that makes any sense. I think he could develop – he's got nice shooting form. If you look at him, I mean, it's not like his mechanics are just busted. He's got – some good techniques. He takes them with a fair amount of confidence. I think he could develop in that area a little bit more. But, you know, you just never know unless you give him the opportunity. And he's got to take it upon himself a little bit to take more and be more confident in that shot, particularly from the corner. So, like I said, you just never know unless you give the guy the opportunity. And I think the Bulls could stand to give him some more opportunities shooting those shots.
While we're talking about Bulls role players, Bulls bench players, I've been, I guess, a little bit surprised recently when the Bulls have been shorthanded in this stretch without Dunn and Markkanen that Hoiberg has gone to Ryan Arcidiacono. He got 7 minutes off the bench last night against the Kings, and Antonio Blakeney was a DNP. Now, you know, these guys on two-way contracts, you know, there's a certain number of days that they're allowed to be up with the Bulls as opposed to down with the G League Windy City Bulls. And some might say, okay, yeah, Blakeney's crushing guys in the G League, but it's the G League, so you take it for a grain of salt. But I really have not been impressed at all with what I've seen from Arcidiacono when he's been on the floor. You know, obviously, minutes for either of them will be hard to come by once Hoiberg gets some of these pieces back, but What is your understanding as far as why Blakeney has been brought up and is spending some of those limited days on this two-way contract with the Bulls and not getting any minutes?
Hoiberg was asked this about a week or so ago. You know, he was asked why Blakeney is not in the rotation. Why not give him a look over Archie Diacono? And basically he said Archie Diacono is the only other true point guard they have on the roster, or really in Dunn's absence, the only true point guard, because Jaren Grant is not a true point guard, as we all know. And so he wants someone to be able to come in and set up the offense and orchestrate the team and get them in the half-court sets. But, you know, he's okay in terms of not making mistakes, but he's not making anything happen. And that, to me, is, I mean, it's like a poor man's Jaren Grant, which, I mean, you know, I don't want to rip on Jaren Grant here. But,
right, but that's, you know, not exactly not, a flattering phrase.
Exactly. Like, you get the point. So he's not contributing anything. I wrote last night, he's got 9 assists and 1 turnover, so he's not making mistakes. But, I mean, that's just unacceptable. And if you're playing in 6 or 7 token minutes, what good is that going to do? Put Antonio out there for that time, and, you know, he might make a couple more mistakes, but he might also ignite your offense. So I would be surprised if going forward, starting with Friday's game against Minnesota, assuming Dunn's not playing, I'd be surprised if Blankney is not overwrite Archie Diacono at that point.
We're chatting with Darnell Mayberry here on Locked On Bulls. Follow him on Twitter at Darnell Mayberry. Now, Darnell, let's shift our focus to this upcoming NBA trade deadline on Thursday. We've heard that the Bulls are still very active, holding on to the guys they got back along with the Sheik, Tony Allen and Jameer Nelson, instead of waiving them, trying to see if maybe they could, you know, swing them around again in some kind of deal. Robin Lopez is on the market. We've heard that Jaren Grant is made available. Who knows if the Bulls could get anything for him. And Justin Holiday is another name that's been mentioned. Now, you're a guy who covered the Oklahoma City Thunder for a lot of years, and they are kind of in a tight spot after losing Andre Roberson. Do you think they might be interested in a guy like Justin Holiday? Do you see any kind of potential deal there? Because, you know, the Bulls are trying to add some assets in the form of draft picks and taking on bad contracts, but the Thunder don't have a first round pick to offer this season. It's already owed to someone else. So any potential you see there as far as the team you used to cover finding a deal with the Bulls?
I think it'll be really, really challenging because, like you said, they don't have a first round pick to give. Maybe they could give up a future first. That's not Sam Presti's MO in terms of not getting a high level player back. And Justin Holiday is a good player. He's a solid player, but he's not a high level player. And I can't see Sam Presti giving up a future first for Justin Holiday. Now there's been some rumblings that Tony Allen, you know, they've got their eye on him. But even if they make a deal with whether it's Allen or Holiday, you know, I don't think the Bulls want the Thunder's second round pick. You know, it's going to be
right
mid to late second round. So, I don't even know if the Thunder has their own second round pick this year, but I just don't see the assets there in Oklahoma City that the Bulls would want. So I think it'll be tricky.
And then let's talk about Robin Lopez for a second. The market and the trade market value for traditional centers who can't space the floor like Lopez are pretty low these days, about as low as they've ever been in the NBA. You know, we heard the reports of the lowball offer that the Cavs sent to the Clippers to try to get DeAndre Jordan, and I think most everybody would agree that DeAndre Jordan has a higher trade value than Robin Lopez. The Bucks were reported to be in the market for a big, and then they make the move to bring in Tyler Zeller, so they're probably out of the equation. Do you see any team, maybe it's the Cavs, maybe it's somebody else, that would be interested in the services of Robin Lopez, and what is the likelihood that he gets moved?
I think it's extremely likely at this point. You know, where there's smoke, there's fire, and Robin Lopez's name has really been a topic all season and really has heated up in the last week or so with rumblings that he's in trade talks. His name's in trade talks. So I do expect him to be moved. Where he goes and what the Bulls get back is going to be interesting. That Bucks deal that you mentioned, it's sort of an interesting case study because, you know, Milwaukee gave up Rashad Vaughn and a second for Tyler Zeller. And so that just kind of shows you what the market is. And it's not very high for a center who, you know, can't space the floor and, you know, is not is not his strong suit guarding in space. So I don't know how much he's going to be able to help a contender. It seems like the contenders already have their key pieces in place. I'm trying to think, like San Antonio, maybe, Gasol's getting, he's long in the tooth, as you guys are familiar with him up here, but maybe some extra size next to Aldridge. But everyone wants to play small now, and that kind of hurts when you have a center that you've got in trade talks. I mean, who's going to want that kind of player? I just don't see much of a fit. But, I also didn't think the Bulls would get a first for Mirotić, and they did. So, who knows what's going to happen.
There's also, a lot of talk around the option the Bulls have as far as taking on a bad contract. They've already done that, taking on Ashik's contract, sending away Nico to New Orleans. But they're still under the salary cap floor. They still have plenty of cap space. And there are a lot of teams who are kind of regretting some of those deals in the giant free agency splash summer of 2016. I mean, I think the Warriors wouldn't mind trading away Nick Young's salary to get out of the luxury. Your former team, the Thunder, they're trying to move Kyle Singler's contract. Wizards have Mahinmi's deal. The Blazers have a few of them with Evan Turner, Mo Harkless, and Myers Leonard. Do you see any particular team that might be the most likely trade partner for the Bulls there to take on another contract with the asset of a future pick attached?
Here's what I'd say. I would think that the Bulls would try to go after a younger player who might be sort of on the out with this current team and take a shot on them. That would be my guess in terms of just trying to get some assets for this rebuild. I mean, everything can't be cap space and draft picks. I mean, those are good. Those are great. Don't get me wrong. But at some point, I think, you want to get in a young piece who's got a little experience in this league and just might not be in the plans with his current team for whatever reason. So that's sort of what one thing that I'm waiting for the Bulls to do, to get back in a young piece. When the Mirotić deal happened, they got three pieces that aren't going to be here, for long and not going to be a part of the rebuild. But they got the draft pick and they got a $12.5 million trade exception. Now I think it's going to be at some point, starting probably at this deadline and then going into the draft, obviously, a time to get some young pieces in place that they can grow and really develop with Dunn, Levine, marketing of the roster, and really expedite this rebuild and not have to wait two and three drafts to keep bringing in talent.
You mentioned the idea of bringing in a young piece who's maybe got a year or two of experience still under his team-controlled rookie deal that the Bulls would like to bring in. Rodney Hood is a name that keeps getting tossed around who doesn't really fit into that category, but the Bulls are reportedly interested. He's 25. He's going to be a restricted free agent this summer, and the Jazz apparently want a first-round draft pick for him. Given where the Bulls are and the fact that they're trying to acquire draft picks in this rebuild, I mean, do you think that Hood is an interesting enough prospect for the Bulls to send away a draft pick, like maybe the one that they just got from New Orleans, to bring in a guy on a test run for the final third of a season and have, the ability to sign any offers he might get in what is expected to be a little bit tighter of a free agent summer?
So, Rodney Hood has developed into a much better player than I thought he would be coming out of Duke. I thought he would be, just kind of a shooter or athlete, but he's turned into a pretty nice player. Is that worth a first-round pick? Maybe. I guess the question would be, would you rather take a flyer on someone with the 16th pick this year, or would you rather get Rodney Hood? If that's the question, if you just boil it down to that basic question, give me Rodney Hood. Now, it's obviously much more complicated than that, much more complex. If Rodney Hood and Zach LaVine are your you'd also obviously throw Dunn and marketing in there too, and whatever draft pick you get in the top 10 this year. But if Hood and LaVine are your main two guys, and they're both up this year, and are going to get paid a lot of money, are those the two pieces that you really want to build with and dedicate a lot of money to? I'm not so sure. But if it's just as simple as, would you rather the 16th pick or Rodney Hood? I think I'd take Rodney Hood. What about you?
I mean, I th- there the more I look at this upcoming 2018 draft class, the more I feel like there are guys in those, you know, early to mid teens that could be real NBA players. And I mean, I like Rodney Hood. I think he's a solid shooter. You know, he's shooting about 40% from downtown this season. I just, you know, I think his game has some holes to it. And yeah, it's probably illogical, but I'm just so excited that we actually got that first round pick for Nico that I was skeptical that we'd get at all. And the fact that, you know, the Pelicans now look like a team that, you know, that pick might end up being somewhere in the mid teens. I would hate to just turn around and give that right away to a guy who I, you know, I respect his game, but I'm not all that excited about it. And I wouldn't be excited about signing him to a significant multiple year deal this summer. Does that make sense?
No, I mean, it makes perfect sense. The one thing that I'd say is, you know, this league is about perimeter play at this point. You know, you're saying guards dominate the league. If you can have a 3-and-D wing or a high-level shooting guard, you've got a leg up. And if the Bulls have Zach LaVine in the fold and Rodney Hood, I think they could have a leg up. The money would hurt those two guys, especially because, you know, they're not high-level two-way players just yet in their career, especially LaVine. But if you've got those guys and they can get out there and use their athleticism and shooting ability, and just their, like I said, athleticism to guard at times, and I think that gives you an advantage over a lot of the other young up and coming teams, because you've got that wing presence, and then you've got obviously Markkanen, Dunn, and whoever is going to get with the top 10 pick this year. So from that standpoint, I mean, I could see it, and I sort of like it a little bit, but I'm just not so sure Rodney Hood is the right guy.
All right, Darnell. Well, before I let you go, I got a couple more questions for you. Being someone who covered the Bulls-Thunder trade of last season from the other side, I mean, everybody in Chicago was just shaking their heads, especially once we saw a brief stint of campaign on the court last season before he was knocked out again with that recurring foot injury. Obviously, it was like fast forwarding to present day, you know, it ended up being that Doug McDermott and Taj Gibson were only half season loaners. Doug's in New York now, Taj is in Minnesota with Tibbs and Jimmy. But in Oklahoma City, were people laughing their asses off saying, oh my gosh, I can't believe we just pulled off that trade. We completely fleeced the Bulls. Enjoy campaign. The guy can't play for crap.
No, it wasn't nearly to that level. You know, a lot of people were still high on Cameron Payne. You know, they just knew that he had some unfortunate injuries, some setbacks that he had to deal with. But people, you know, I think that the belief in Cameron was waning in Oklahoma City. But you know, he didn't really get that much of an opportunity there because of the injuries, and you know, that was unfortunate. But they, you know, Anthony Morrow, a guy you didn't mention, you know, they loved his shooting ability, and he was a consummate professional. But yes, Thunder fans and the media down there all raved about the deal. Taj Gibson came, his reputation preceded him, and everyone knew that he was a consummate pro as well, and just a rugged player on the court, as we all know up here now. But you know, I don't think anyone was doing backflips. I think they knew that Doug McDermott could shoot the level off the ball, and Taj was a really, really nice player. You know, they liked Cameron Payne, and they were sad to see him go in some ways, but they also thought that they won the trade.
All right, and final one. As a guy who is new to Chicago, hopefully you're starting to feel a little bit settled. Favorite aspects about Chicago city life and favorite Chicago eats?
You know what's funny, Matt? Are you from Chicago? Are you a native?
Yeah, I grew up in the suburbs.
So the interesting thing to me is that Chicagoans don't seem to like this deep dish pizza. Like everyone I talk to says they don't really like it. They prefer thin crust. What's up?
What? Who are you talking to, man?
I mean, like just the people I run to and you know, in and around the arena. It's just, you know, people with the team, people cover the team, just everyone I talk to, they seem like they don't like, I love Giordano. Yeah, I cannot get enough of Giordano's. I try to, you know, pace myself because I don't want to the loom here of popping the pounds. But
you can't eat those slices like you can eat thin crust slices.
Yeah, exactly. Like, don't put a thin crust pizza in front of me. Like, I'm knocking off. I love pizza, but I probably knock it off the table. If you're asking me, is deep dish or thin crust? Deep dish every day of the week.
And you're not a Chicago native, and you prefer the deep dish.
Yeah, I mean, I grew up in Oklahoma, spent some time on the East Coast, but and then I've also heard people say that they prefer New York style pizza over Chicago style pizza. I'm like, what are you talking about?
I don't know who these people are that you're talking to, Darnell, but you gotta set them straight. I still think that it's at least more than 50% Chicagoans prefer deep dish to thin crust. And okay, I mean, okay, I get it. You're allowed to enjoy both. I enjoy a good piece of thin crust every once in a while, but I feel like as a Chicagoan, it's a written rule that you gotta vote deep dish. Now, you mentioned that you like the Giordano's. Have you tried Pequot's?
I did try it about 3 weeks ago. It doesn't. I would probably rank them, and I've been trying to. I've been going around, man. I'm talking Chicago dogs, Italian beef, you know, deep dish pizza, Garrett's popcorn, the works. Like anything that you know you should do or eat while you're, you know, as a newbie to the city. I've been trying, so I would rank them: Giordano's, Lou Malnati's, and then Pequot.
Okay, all right. Interesting,
but a lot of people rave about Pequod's. I mean,
Pequod's is like the new hot up and coming favorite. A lot of Chicagoans are like, "Oh man, you got to try Pequod's." It's that burnt cheese crust that they do that really has started to win a lot of people over.
Here's what I did because I heard the wait could be insane. I went on a Saturday morning at like 11:30. I think they opened at 11, and I went at 11:30. No wait. I'm like, if I have to wait 2-3 hours for a pizza, I don't care how good it is. It's not going to live up to my expectations. So I had to go when there was no wait. And that did help because if I would have waited for the pizza I got and I'm already ranking it third, it wouldn't have even made my list.
All right. I mean, that's fair. I appreciate the honesty and I appreciate the gumption to get up and go get some deep dish pizza at 11 a.m. on a Saturday. That is that is some serious dedication. All right, Darnell. Well, thank you so much for sharing some of your time with us on Locked On Bulls today. We really appreciate it. He's Darnell Mayberry. He covers the Bulls for The Athletic Chicago. You can get all of his great Bulls coverage at theathletic.com. If you don't subscribe, you should. And you can follow him on Twitter at Darnell Mayberry. Thanks a lot, Darnell. A pleasure chatting with you, man.
Thanks for having me, Matt.
Our thanks again to Darnell Mayberry. Great chatting with him. Great getting his Bulls insight as we are in a pretty interesting week for the Bulls. The tank back on track, a big tank win against the Kings last night. Really hard to see this team play without two of their key pieces in Chris Dunn and Lauri Markkanen. Hopefully we'll have Markkanen back on the floor Friday. That is expected at this point. Still unsure about Dunn. He might be out for a while longer, but you had to be impressed with what you saw from Zach LaVine, scoring his season-high 27 points in a losing effort to the Kings. So, Jordan and I will be back. Hopefully, we'll get Jordan back on tomorrow's episode. Hopefully, he's feeling better. And we will continue to talk about what we have on deck, the Bulls-Timberwolves matchup on Friday. Jordan and I very much looking forward to going to that with one of our Locked On Bulls loyal listeners, Robert, who won our tickets giveaway. Congrats again to him. And we'll also be sure to give you the latest on any Bulls news, rumors, updates as far as this trade deadline as we get closer and closer to that deadline on Thursday. So thanks again for listening. As a reminder, you can always subscribe to us on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Spotify, anywhere you listen to your favorite podcasts, you'll find us. And be sure to listen to us on Dash Radio, live every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. Follow us on Twitter at Bulls_Peck, at Jordan C. Melly, and at Locked On Bulls. Don't forget to send us your mailbag questions. We'll be taking some mailbag cues in tomorrow's episode. That's Wednesday. You can email those to us at LockedOnBulls@gmail.com or just send us a question on the Twitter machine at Locked On Bulls. This is Matt Peck saying thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you tomorrow, Bulls Nation. We out.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com, part of FanRag Sports.